Hello and welcome to Radio Contra, the podcast of American Partisan. I'm NC Scout, coming to you live from the G Camp in rural North Carolina. It's the very first episode of the year. I'm glad to have you back with us once again for episode 2, and we're going to jump right into it. It's looking like 2020 is going to shape up to be an incredible year, right on the precipice of history. Whether or not that you're politically active, you've taken an interest in all this stuff, 2020 is going to be a big eye-opener for a lot of folks. We've got things that are shaping up in Virginia, got things that are shaping up in Washington State, Kentucky, Georgia, New York. So this first segment is brought to you by Ammo.com. You don't have enough ammunition for what's coming down the pipe. Nobody does. Ammo.com, one of the best companies on the net, big site supporter of American Partisan. Go and pick up some ammo from them. If you spend $200 clicking on the link in the sidebar, spend $200, you'll get $15 off of your first order. Let them know that you found them through American Partisan. Show them some love. Show us some love. We really appreciate it. Jumping into the news, 1st Brigade 82nd has deployed to Kuwait. Global Response Force, GRF. I remember those guys from my days on Bragg. I would tell you, it really suck to be standing on Green Ramp on New Year's. So say a prayer for them. Obviously, they are deploying to the Middle East in reaction to the deteriorating situation that's going on in Baghdad, the attack on the embassy. Hezbollah is behind this, and, you know, careful observation, some of the open source stuff that's out there, the yellow flags with the AK and the fist raised, that is the flag of Hezbollah. Hezbollah is really highly active in Iraq both times that I was there. Very, very active in Kirkuk on my first deployment. Bringing EFPs in, explosive form projectiles. Hezbollah is some nasty guys. And they've been working as a force to destabilize Iraq for some time now. But interestingly enough, the friends of Hezbollah's backers, Iran, North Korea, claims that they have a new strategic weapon. The details of which are kind of vague, but if I had to venture to guess, and I really don't like guessing in this profession, but right now it's kind of all we got, I would say that it has something to do with the Russian transonic missile that was developed. North Korea and Russia do share technology, as well as China and North Korea. Yeah, much to the contrary of what some defense analysts will tell you, they absolutely share technology, and they are a threat. You know, the world powers outside of the United States have been trying to figure out for a long time how to negate the strategic value of the carrier battle group. And one of the ways to do that is via a transonic missile that's incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to intercept. Successfully unveiled one, the Russians have. It's been in development for some time. And we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But it's not looking real good. The bigger point of that is that all of this coincides with domestic issues that we're having here in the United States, most notably Virginia. But I would be remiss to not include some of the issues that we've had just over the past week. The church attack that was in Texas that was foiled by armed parishioners that were in the congregation. And, you know, good on you guys. Good on you guys. When police are minutes away, when seconds count, you know, law enforcement, police are always minutes away. And, you know, your responsibility, the very point of you being armed is taking that that responsibility for your own security into your own hands. And there was a similar attack in New York. It was a Hanukkah get-together. Guy broke in, African-American male, broke in with a machete, attacked the folks there. And this is, as I understand it, the sixth anti-Semitic attack in New York City, you know, in the past couple weeks. So they've got a serious problem. What was interesting is there were photos that came out right after that of guys walking around, you know, open carrying in New York City, open carrying ARs, and you know, for their own personal protection. And again, you know, I say, hey, good on you. Open defiance of the law for your own protection, I say it's absolutely justified. So good on you guys. Getting back to the larger point, all of this coincides, all the international happenings seem to coincide with the domestic issues, the brawling domestic issues that we have growing here in America. You know, don't think that the world doesn't see, especially the world that is contrary to the interests of the United States, would love nothing more than to create domestic discord here at home. Don't think that they don't pay attention to our domestic politics. They know that they can, they know when and where they can poke the bear. I'll just leave it at that. All right, our next section is brought to you by Gun Mag Warehouse. So you've got the guns, you've got the ammo, maybe. Do you have enough magazines? In class, I tell folks that mags are expendable items. You know, we all love to do those speed mag changes when we're on the range or when we are in combat. But your life is not worth an $8 mag. I've went through a lot of magazines in my time, both as a soldier and a civilian, and you never, ever, ever have enough. Every month, I pick up more AR mags. I pick up more AK mags. Every time I order ammo, I'm picking up more magazines. You can literally never have enough. And I'd also like to give a shout-out to our site affiliate, Ranger Up. Sixth principle of patrolling. You know, we all know, or we all should know, five principles of patrolling: planning, recon, security, control, and common sense. But the sixth principle of patrolling, looking cool while doing it. And if you want to look cool while doing it, Ranger Up's a good way to look awesome. All right, so let's jump into community communications networking, or rapidly equipping a region, your local town, your county, wherever it is that you might be. How to equip a region rapidly with communications infrastructure. I'll say right off the bat, this is the very backbone of a resistance movement, is the ability to communicate. And the ability to build that infrastructure in a region, whether it's a resistance movement or whether you're, you know, preparing for natural disaster or whatever, it's a very good idea to have an off-grid communications means that's very basic. And through its basic setup and through a very simple setup, the simpler the better, the more robust it's going to be. The ability to equip a region rapidly is really important too, because, you know, I have the people that I communicate with in my local mutual assistance group. You know, you, chances are you probably do too, but the people that I communicate with now may not necessarily be the people that I'm communicating with in the future exclusively. You know, I might need to equip a lot more people in my region, you know, either as they wake up or inevitable has indeed occurred, and I need to get them squared away in short order. So we're going to be talking about that. First things first, I'll cover the license-free communications means, and then we'll jump into amateur radio just a little bit, and I'm going to talk about exactly what you need to accomplish that goal. All right, so the first option, and the one that is by far the most common, is citizens band radio, or CB. People have known about CB. It's been in American pop culture, you know, since at least the 1970s, Smokey and the Bandit and Dukes of Hazzard and all that awesome stuff. And it's important to know exactly what CB is and what it isn't. CB, first and foremost, is Citizens Band Radio. It's license free. It works in AM or amplitude modulation mode, which means it's much more susceptible to electric noise in your working environment. It is 40 channels that is centered just at the top end of 26 megahertz all the way up to the top end of 27 megahertz. It is channelized. There are some radio sets out there that allow you to work in single sideband mode. And what single sideband mode is you're basically cutting the bandwidth of that AM carrier in half. And so you have upper sideband and then you have lower sideband. Some folks have said, you know, that gives you extra channels. It doesn't. You can hear a sideband signal on AM mode. It's just going to sound a little garbled. Sometimes you're able to understand it, sometimes you're not. But with a CB, you're going to find them a lot around truck stops. Truckers use them. A lot of old timers out here in where I live, a lot of old timers have them in their pickups. I've got them in both of my vehicles. And you know, it is what it is. It is 4 watts generally. Now, some folks that run linear amplifiers and whatnot, that's technically not lawful, but you know, people do it. And it pushes 4 watts. You can have up to 12 watts on sideband mode, but a CB radio that's used in single sideband is considerably more expensive than the regular AM version. Some important things to know, though. CB is about as simple as it gets as far as a radio setup goes. You can hook one up in your truck really easy. In my bug out vehicle, my primary bug out vehicle, I've got a 50 cal ammo can sitting right in the center. My primary bug out vehicle is a Ford Super Duty. And I've got one in the center console, and I've got two radios bolted into it. One is a Cobra Model 29 LTD with the old school with the chrome faceplate and all that. And the other one that I have is a QYT KT 8900 or 8900. And I'll put links to all those in the bottom of this post. But with the CB, it's really simple. On the back of a CB, you have a UHF connector, or also known as SO239 or PL259. It is the most common type of coax connector you're going to have. And it's important to know, too, that radio transceivers that transmit as well as receive, they're known as transceivers, they use 50 ohm coax. The coax cable that I use for nearly all of my radio connections, by the way, is RG or Romeo Golf 8 X-ray or RG 8X. It's dirt cheap. It works. Is it the best quality stuff in the world? Who knows? But it works. And I've never had many problems with it. But bottom line, it's cheap and it's effective. And, you know, who doesn't love cheap and effective as well as field expedient? You know, I can find that stuff at literally any truck stop. When I'm traveling to classes, by the way, if I'm driving when I'm traveling to classes, which is fairly often, a little game that I play is stopping by truck stops along the way and just seeing what equipment I can source. Because in the RTO course, one of the things I teach is improvised antennas and improvising your radio equipment out in the wild and seeing what you can get, you know, and the more robust my communications plan is, the better off my community is going to be, because, you know, when I get that MacGyver music kicking on and whatnot, you know, I'm able to make an antenna and I'm able to make, you know, my radio equipment out of just about anything. And, you know, nobody can ever take skills away from you. you know, aside from you not practicing them. But nobody can ever take those skills away from you. Anyway, circling back to CB, you know, it's awesome because it is so common. It's so robust. You know, the connection that I use to an antenna, I've got a Fire Stick 4-foot whip antenna. It's a fiberglass whip. It works really well. There's some people out there that you know, don't like Fire Sticks and they'd rather have a Browning or, you know, 108-inch whip antenna, which, you know, growing up, everybody had one of those on their trucks back in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, those work really well too, but I've always had very good results with that Fire Stick 4-foot antenna. And I've got a spring on the bottom of it, so when I'm driving through the woods, when I'm hunting, or, you know, doing whatever it is I need to do, it's got some flexibility to it, so the antenna is not going to break. But, you know, some of the drawbacks of CB, well, first of all, it's channelized. It's 40 channels. It's a fairly narrow bandwidth frequency-wise. So you're kind of limited in what you can do and what you can't do. Another drawback to CB is the fact that it's license free and the equipment is so common. I mean, that's the strength of it too, but it is so common that you have a lot of folks who you probably don't want to talk to that are going to be on as well. So you really don't have a lot of communication security there. I can speak for CB around where I live, in Central North Carolina, that, it is a party line for illegals and, you know, all 40 channels, you know, you get on a Friday night. If you speak some Spanish, you can get a heck of a deal on some fighting roosters and a pair of bootleg cowboy boots. But, you know, you may or may not find out much information about the local goings on. So that's something to think about. And the fact that it is AM, you're going to have some power line noise getting in there. If it's in your vehicle, it's a vehicle setup, you might get some alternator hum. There's some drawbacks there. Another thing is that you don't really have a way of understanding what your true range is. Really is with your CB, unless you just have people in your community that you're talking to all the time, and you may or may not. I do suggest having it as a backup means of communication just because of its commonality. Moving on, MERS, up the band a little bit. MERS is VHF, or very high frequency. It is 5 channels, 151.82 or 151.82 megahertz, all the way up to 154 megahertz. It's 5 channels, VHF, and it is FM, frequency modulated, which means you're not going to hear that electrical noise or that atmospheric noise. Frequency modulation cuts out all of that. That's why FM transmissions, when you hear them in your vehicle, like with broadcast radio, for example, they are so much clearer than AM stations would be. But with MERS, it is license free. It's 5 frequencies, 5 channels. And the most common use for MERS is with the Dakota Alert motion detectors. A lot of people, especially where I live, they have them up as driveway alarms. I do as well. I also carry them out on patrol when I'm doing patrolling as a passive security means for route overwatch. They work really well for that. And VHF has a lot of strengths in rural areas because of the propagation means of VHF. It works really well in hilly areas. Terrain. There are some drawbacks though. Again, it is channelized, and because of that, there's only 5 channels as is. So you're kind of limited. If you're only relying on MERS, you're kind of limited in what you can do. However, the upside to that is that your Baofeng UV5R, your QYT KT8900, those radios will utilize MERS frequencies, as will most amateur radio equipment. If you get a Mars Cap Mod or a spelled out phonetically Mike Alpha Romeo Sierra / Charlie Alpha Papa, Mars Cap is a military auxiliary radio service, and Cap is Civil Air Patrol. But a lot of people who are members of those organizations who are also amateur radio operators would modify their gear back in the day, and still do. You can get that done. You can do it yourself. You know, if you have the equipment to do it, most of the time the modification is pretty simple. You can also get it done by amateur radio stores like Gigaparts. They'll do it. Ham Radio Outlet will do it. I know DX Engineering will do it as well. And all those guys are really good companies. But, you know, Baofeng, it comes from the factory, you know, in China, probably using child labor. But they don't have those frequency restrictions on their stuff. And that QIT doesn't either. Another unique drawback to MERS, though, is the fact that it is sandwiched right there in between some public safety and public service frequencies. You don't want to step on those for obvious reasons. You're going to get some unwanted attention. And also, you've got Marine Band right around in there, too. Marine Band is an option. Marine Band VHF is an option, really, only if you're living in areas that have large bodies of water. Otherwise, I'm going to tell you to stay off of that. For here in North Carolina, it's utilized by a couple of public service agencies, including North Carolina Department of Wildlife. I'm telling you, folks, do not mess around on those frequencies. There's some hunting clubs around here that do that, and I've got some pretty funny personal stories of hunting clubs doing that even recently, and the game warden talking back to them, and then coming and writing them tickets for untagged deer. In fact, in the last signals intelligence course that I did, I told them, you know, literally we're going to pick up somebody out here right now because, you know, it's dead center of deer season. We're going to pick up somebody on Marine Band. And sure enough, as soon as I said it, we locked on to one of the Marine channels and have some good old boys talking about, you know, they're trying to find one of their deer dogs. It's something to be aware of, you know, but MERS has a lot of strengths. I mean, I see it as a pretty significant step up over CB. And because a lot of people don't know what it is, got some security there through obscurity. So the next one is FRS/GMRS, and that is the Family Radio Service or the General Mobile Radio Service. And I have these two together because they share frequencies, they share channels. FRS is going to be those blister pack radios that you get in like Walmart, the Motorola talk bouts. You know, they're okay for what they are. Normally they push out a half a watt. You're going to get very, very short range on them, despite what the packages often claim. To be honest, before, you know, the Baofengs hit the scene, a lot of people suggested those FRS radios, and they are very simple to use, but because they're so limited and because they're channelized, I'm kind of loath to recommend them. But a few facts about FRS and GMRS. They're both in the UHF range, in the 462 to 468 megahertz range. And this makes them really good options for urban areas. FRS does not require a license. GMRS does. But the GMRS fee is $75, or maybe it went up to $80. I'll have to check on that. You can buy it for a whole family, and there's no testing involved or anything. You simply submit the money and, you know, pay the cursory fee, and then you're good to go. But it is UHF, and it is FM, frequency modulated. You know, the same radio equipment that Baofeng UV5R and that QUIT 8900 will work just perfectly fine on those frequencies. And in the RTO course that I teach, I tell people to program their radio equipment with those frequency ranges, with those channels. If for nothing else, even if they have no interest in using the license-free stuff, if for no other reason, it gives you a way to monitor what's going on in your operating environment. And that kind of leads me to my next point. I don't really understand the rift in getting into the amateur radio, the ham radio community, how the ham radio community looks at license-free stuff, like they don't want to use it. I use it all the time. I've been a ham for a while. You know, obviously I write quite a bit about this stuff, but, you know, I use the license-free frequencies and license-free services all the time, because the reality is that most of the people in your group are not going to be hams, you know, and they're not going to be real active in amateur radio. So, you know, you have to equip people who might not otherwise have much of a background in communications or even understand their equipment. You just have to get them up and running with as little headache as possible. So jumping on into amateur radio, there's three levels to amateur radio, the three levels to the licensing. There's technician, general, and extra class. Technician is entry level. That's going to get you on VHF and UHF. For the most part, there's a little sliver of space that'll get you on HF, but unless you know Morse code, and these days there's really not that many technicians that do, you know, you're not going to be on HF. General class gets you on HF. You have, you know, a huge number of privileges, and you know what I like to tell folks is at least get your general class. The tests are not that difficult. I don't think they're that hard at all. And if you have a basic understanding of electronics knowledge and basic knowledge of operating practice, you'll do just fine. And there's a lot of carryover, too, between the questions on the technician exam and the general class exam. So chances are, if you can pass one, you'll pass the other. Extra class is a little more detailed and, you know, quite a bit more questions. It's more engineering based, and it's a lot of detail oriented when you're getting into different modes and bandwidths and stuff for things. But you know, if this is your thing and you want to master your craft, you know, getting manning up and getting that extra license is where you want to be. But with ham radio, and I'm going to cover this in a later podcast, getting on HF, the ability to get on HF is very important when we're talking about communicating and coordinating over a region. And, you know, I'm going to tell you, the learning curve on HF or high frequency radio is extremely steep. If you're not doing it now and you're not getting active practice in that now, or at least, you know, come out, get some training in the RTO course. And, you know, if you can't make it to RTO course, you know, at least get with some local hams that have an HF set up in your area. Figure out how some of this stuff works, because there is a huge learning curve to this. That, you know, you're not going to get it right off the bat. I promise you, you're not. But amateur radio, it opens up a world of options as far as equipment goes, as far as equipment capabilities go, and as far as the knowledge base goes, because there's a lot of folks in the amateur radio community who are preppers and who have a huge amount of knowledge. Now, you know, I have found that they tend to get a little too wrapped around the axle about small details, but you know, that's fine. Everybody has their idiosyncrasies. Get with them, learn some stuff, and you know, meet people in your community that are going to end up being a pretty big resource, you know, because at the end of the day, it's the people in your local community that are going to matter the most. You know, when we're building that Gorilla Underground, or we're talking about the Gorilla Support Network, it's really important to understand that not everybody is a trigger puller. Not everybody's going to be a trigger puller. And one of the problems that I've found in the years of doing this, of you know, training groups and consulting other groups, and the you know, hundreds of people that I've had the blessing to interact with, one of the issues that they have is the fact that a group will just have their designated commo guy, just like they have their designated medical guy, or they have their designated mechanic, or whatever. And they say, you know, oh, Tom over there is going to be our designated commo guy. Well, the problem with that is that they just kind of leave all the details up to him. Nobody wants to cross train. And then, boom, you know, they go out, they burn down steel or targets or whatever with their rifles, doing all the cool guy stuff that gets all the attention. And they haven't learned how to properly implement their communications equipment. And that's a problem. You know, we have that issue in the Army too. I did, and I think a lot of units do. The commo stuff is more mundane details. And what I learned in my experience was that almost all the commo failures that we had were operator error. I would say probably 90% of the time or more. It was not the equipment, it was the operator. They made a mistake somehow. They programmed it wrong, broke the antenna, just something. They did something, and it wasn't the equipment. So, I mean, you gotta be training in this stuff. You have to. It's very important. A few more words about equipment. You know, the cables I already hit on. You can spend a whole lot of money on coax cable for just a little bit of gain. Like I said, I use RG8X for just about everything, or Romeo Golf 8 X-Ray. I use it for just about everything because it's dirt cheap. I can get it anywhere and it works, you know, and if I break the wire somewhere, or the, you know, the wire dry rots from exposure to the elements, or, you know, I was checking an HF antenna, back in September, and I noticed that a squirrel had bit through coax cable, I can replace it, and I'm not out very much money, you know. So there's other options out there. LMR coax is LMR 400 is a really common one. That's a good one for a base station setup. My base unit for VHF and UHF, I'm using LMR only because I got the stuff for free from a friend. It's running to my base unit antenna. Really good coax. Another thing is that you want to standardize your connections. And generally speaking, there's three different types of connections that you're going to have with your radio equipment. With base stations and mobile units, like you're going to have in vehicles and in houses, the most common connector you're going to have is those UHF connectors, or SO239, socket 239, or PL259, meaning plug, male and female ends. That's what they're called. Those are going to be your most common ones. But the other two that you're going to have is BNC, or Bravo November Charlie. And you're going to recognize this by the two posts. You slide the connector over it and twist it into place. A lot of handheld scanners have BNC connectors. And then the other one is SMA. SMA is the very small, fine, threaded connector. You're going to find these on your handheld radios, your Baofengs, you know, my Yaesu VX6R. This is where you're going to find those. And it's important to have adapters. And, you know, if you don't have enough adapters, what we do in the RTO course, I show the guys, I have a little fishing tackle box that I keep with me, stays in my patrol bag, everywhere I go. And I can improvise connectors anywhere I go because I have connectors for literally everything. And I have a lot of spares. Have those spares. Finally, the last connector that I'm going to talk about is the one that we use in class to build antennas. In the Army, we called them Cobra heads. And I spent a lot of time outside the Army trying to figure out where I could buy these Cobra heads just so that I could build my own antennas. I was finally told when I went to a ham fest and found them, there was a very attractive older lady there who was selling these connectors and a lot of different connectors that were out there. And she took me by the hand and she says, "No, dear, that is a split post BNC adapter." And sometimes you'll hear them called banana jacks also, but we use these in the RTO course for building wire antennas. Antenna building, I do a whole antenna building lab in both levels of the RTO course, RTO basic. I cover the basics of antenna construction in there, and everybody builds a jungle antenna or a 292 antenna. And I explain the theory behind that, why that's an important antenna to build, why it's one of the basic ones to build. And then when we get into the advanced RTO course, we build wire antennas using resistors for those directional capabilities. It's a heck of a lot of fun to do that. And it's one of the best learning experiences that folks have in class. You know, again, like I said earlier in a podcast, you can never take away skills from somebody. You can never, once I teach a man to fish, he can fish for his whole life. He can feed his whole family. Once you teach people those awesome skills and you see that spark, that's a big reward for, you know, and it should be for you too, because you're able to build that infrastructure. If I'm able to teach people the principles behind their communications equipment, how to use it, and most importantly, how to make it relevant, they're going to be a lot more receptive to training with it and getting out there and using it. And that's where it's really important, folks. That's where it's going to make the difference. And when you're talking about creating a guerrilla underground or a support network for resistance, that's really, really important. And, you know, that while that example is a bit dramatic, if there is a natural disaster and all of a sudden all of the means of communication are gone, you know, the cell phone towers and everything else have been taken out, and yet I'm still able to communicate by building my own equipment, I'm that much better off. I'm an asset to my community, and I'm not a detriment to anyone. I'm not a hindrance to anyone. I'm able to help rather than harm, you know, and that's the goal we should all be looking for. So I'd like to give a shout out to Ready Made Resources. They are big site supporter of American Partisan, big time supporter of all things prepper. And I've got to know the business owner, had him in class, and we will be hosting a class for Ready Made Resources in Tennessee coming up in May. Awesome company, awesome group of folks. And one of the big things that they sell is night vision equipment. There's a saying that we had when I was in the Army, and that was that we own the night. We're able to operate at night anytime, anywhere, and that we're able to fight at night and our adversaries don't have that capability. Now, I can tell you from my experience in Iraq, having night vision capability is a huge asset, obviously. And they gave us a lot of confidence. But when the rumors started getting around that some of the higher level snipers that we were facing off against that had been trained in either Chechnya, and a couple of them were coming over from Iran, they possibly had night vision equipment, that caused our pucker factor to get pretty tight. You know, it was a psychological weapon on their part against us. It made us that much more careful at night. So for the potential freedom fighter out there on our side, the ability to get night vision equipment now is huge. And if you're not adding that capability into your portfolio and your skill set, you're wrong. You need to get yourself squared away. Talk to them. Talk to Ready Made Resources. We've got a link in the sidebar, click on it, go over there, shoot them an email. They are great folks, and they are going to get you squared away. Folks, I'd like to say thank you once more. Happy New Year. the response that I got from the first podcast was incredibly positive, and I really thank you for that. It's my goal to bring you guys the very best, absolute best that I can, at least once a week, if not twice. If you have questions, shoot us an email. If you are interested in coming out, taking a class, getting some training, I have my training calendar. Click on the link in the sidebar that says Brush Beater, and my training calendar will be up there. I've got several RTO courses on the calendar, one right around the corner here in January. I've got another one in North Carolina in April, one in Tennessee in May, and the Readout Communications course in June has filled up. It filled up faster, way faster than I thought it was going to, which is huge. And if you shot me an email and didn't get that deposit in, don't fret. We've got another one. Talk to the owners of the range out in Wyoming where we're going to be doing it. We're able to schedule another one in September. I've got that up on the schedule. So if you're interested in taking it, I'll be out in the Readout region. That class will be RTO, advanced RTO, as well as a signals intelligence course. A couple other classes that I have on the horizon for you folks in the Northeast. I've got a ground intelligence collectors course, which rounds out some of the elements of the signals intelligence course, as well as teaching about targeting and understanding the targeting aspects of the intelligence cycle. And I'm going to be handing off a lot of information in that class, as well as open source programs that you'll be able to use. And of course, with all my classes, we have a lot of hands-on exercises, a lot of field work. And I think that if you're in the Northeast and you're interested in doing it, it's in New Jersey. It's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. The other classes that I've had up there have been a lot of fun. There's a reason that I keep going up there, because it's just an absolute blast every time I go. And I love you guys up there. And then finally, I've got an RTO, an advanced RTO course that is going to be just outside of Madison, Wisconsin. That's going to be coming up at the end of June. Really looking forward to getting up there to Green Bay Packers territory. Known several folks from Wisconsin that I worked with in the Army, and all of them really good people. And I am looking forward to working with you guys in the Northern Midwest, out in the heartland of America. Folks, that's all I got for today. Just keep in mind, no matter how grim things look, no matter how dark stuff gets, it always gets darkest before dawn. God bless, and I'll talk to you soon.